Mitzvotin, Bichvod Achsanya. I just wanted to thank, firstly, Rabbi Schwartz for being so immediate and open to having this askara this evening. So I'd like to call upon Rabbi Schwartz, the Mor D'Atra of Congregation Ohev Tzedek, to give Divrei Pticha.
For the Choshev Rabbonim, a time like this, think of a pasuk, Sha'al avicha v'yagedcha zekeinecha v'yomru lach. Our zikaron, our memory is jarred at such a time. We think when such an extraordinary person passes from this world, many of us are thinking of an extraordinary shir we heard, perhaps the first time we met Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. I turn back to the year 1969, in third grade in Gveret Shisha's class at Yeshiva Soloveitchik. We were told that day that a very famous rabbi was going to teach us, was going to talk to us that day. And we were prepared. We went over the Rashis, we went over some of the recent psukim we were learning, some of the parshas we were learning, and we were up to parshas toldos at the time. The rabbi who was interviewing us made such an impression that 45 plus years later, I still remember it. He spoke about parenting, he spoke about siblings, he spoke about brotherhood, about blindness, specifically remember that. He spoke about the dichotomy between Yaakov and Esav. He educed the information from us, from a bunch of eight-year-olds. He then asked if anyone can recite all of the parshios from the beginning of the Torah until the one we were learning. And I thought I remembered them, but before I had a chance to raise my hand, my best friend sitting right to my right raised his hand first, came to the front of the room, and proceeded to recite all of the parshios from Bereishis until the Zosa Bracha. And I'm not sure if even anyone in the room knew that Moshe Lichtenstein, who was reciting those parshios, was the son of the man who was giving us that far hair that day. We were best friends from first grade to fourth grade, and I remember he always used to say at show and tell, tomorrow I'm going to Boston. Tomorrow I'm going to Boston for Shabbos. We didn't know where he was going. He never told us that the school, Yeshiva Rabbi Moses Soloveitchik, was named after someone that he was named after. It's characteristic anivus on the same level as their greatness. We're learning these weeks in the Torah about Tumah and Tahara. Tumah bespeaks that which is closed. It's atom. It is stopped up. Its opposite is Tahara because it's everlasting. It's open. Yiras Hashem Tahora Omedes Lo'ad. Tahara is flowing. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein taught us that day that when Esav came back from the field, he had heard that Avram Avinu had passed away and responded adversely. Hinei anochi holeich lamus v'lo mazali b'chora. Zaidi just died. We're all going to die. I see death in the field all the time. Lo mazali b'chora. What do I need? A birthright. He saw the color red that day. And to him, red was the color of death. And we are baffled by death. But that's okay. The ancients were preoccupied with trying to solve death and overcome death. The Torah tells us to purify death with the color red also, with a mitzvah that is as baffling as death itself. These things Rav Aaron Lichtenstein was teaching to eight-year-olds at Yeshiva Soloveitchik. So death makes no sense to us either, but we will purify it. We'll purify it this evening with a number of recollections from some of his main Talmidim. He passed away b'tahara in purity, his teachings and his Torah suffused with yiras shamayim, and they are omedes lo'ad, like tahara itself. We do not try to solve death like the pagans. We make our peace with it. We have divrei nichumim until bila hamavas lanetzach u'machah Hashem alokim dima me'al kol panim. Until then, we console ourselves with these words from Talmidim. I call back Rabbi Kelman to explain where the proceedings will go from here.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Schwartz. As Rabbi Schwartz mentioned, we do not understand death. It makes no sense to us, and obviously there's no good time for it. However, the exact time that we find ourselves in right now and the day we find ourselves, I think, is symbolic and appropriate for the wonderful, the great Rabban Lichtenstein itself, of whom we're commemorating this evening. We're right now literally in Ben Hashmasha, a time when the sun has descended, but it's not yet complete darkness. And in a sense, this is what we're feeling right now, as you recall, of Arn, of Lichtenstein itself, the great sun has descended. Like Moshe Rabbeinu, as Gemara tells us, was the sun, but we know that there is a Yareach, we know that his incredible feats and the Talmidim that he has left makes sure that we will not be in darkness, even if we are feeling that right now, those who knew him feeling a real Avelis the last few days, the sudden shock of hearing of this terrible news. And it's also, as we know, Yom HaTzma'ut. It's actually night now beginning HeYar. We moved it up this year a day. And one of the things that sometimes can get lost with Rav Lichtenstein, with all of his greatness, all of his Talmud Torah, his incredible midot, was his incredible love for Eretz Yisrael. It's one very brief vignette, the time when I was a Talmud, a student at Yeshivat Har Etzion. There was a time where Rav Lichtenstein felt that some of us perhaps didn't appreciate the greatness of Eretz Yisrael, Medinat Yisrael, the wonder, the Nisim. And he brought us all together, the entire Machzor, all of us, some 60 or so students. And he actually began by saying, he normally does not speak in English, it's a Shita, speak in Hebrew, of course, but he wanted to make sure we completely understood what he was going to say. And without obviously repeating everything, the point he made to us, he recalled to us Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu, after 22 years of thinking his son, his beloved Yosef, was dead, he finally finds out that he's alive. You would think the first intuition is to immediately drop everything, run off to Mitzrayim. And yet the Torah reminds us that Yaakov goes to sleep in Marat HaLaila, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu comes to him and says, Al tira mirdam Mitzrayim. The Kadosh Baruch Hu has to reassure him, as Rashi points out to us, that he was made tsar. He felt troubled that he was niskak to leave for Chutz La'aretz. And he said, that's the sense we have to feel in terms of our love for Eretz Yisrael, that if we ever have to leave it, then to be made sorrow for it, to appreciate the beauty of Eretz Yisrael. And as we stand here, Ben Hashmashot of Yom HaTzma'ut, we recall also the tremendous love that he had for Eretz Yisrael and that he imparted to so many thousands and thousands of students who made Aliyah, those who haven't yet made Aliyah. And just to return to the theme of the Yareach, as I mentioned, many, many different Yerachim, many different thousands of Yerachim that Rav Lichtenstein has left us. We're going to hear from a number of the top, I would say, Yerachim tonight that will give us solace. We'll hear from Rabbi Blau, Rabbi Helfgott, Rabbi Natty Helfgott, Rabbi Dr. Berger, and Rabbi Vizi Scheinfeld. But to begin, I want to call upon Andrew Bordak, who is a Talmid, not a rabbi, which is the majority, of course, of his students, and perhaps that's his greatest impact. People who are not necessarily going to play Kodesh, although we know he inspired so many people to go into that. Andrew was a Talmid, served for many years on the board, and is now the president of the Etzion Foundation.
Allow me to express my gratitude to Rabbi Schwartz and Congregation of Tzedek for hosting this Azkara on such short notice, and to Rabbi Mori Kelman for helping organize it. Someone, as Rabbi Kelman just pointed out, who does not have smicha and who did not go into chinuch, I'm not one of the most likely people to be speaking this evening. Yet as with many of Rav Aaron's Talmidim, we're simply balabatim, and I mean that in the finest sense of the phrase, I was profoundly shaped and impacted by Rav Aaron. While others here tonight surely had a closer relationship with Rav Aaron, whether as Talmidim or personally, please allow me to share a few thoughts, which, while perhaps not the most eloquent, are certainly heartfelt. As I sat in Yeshiva's Beit Midrash 2 days ago for Rav Aaron's Havaya, I was struck by the contrast with the events of just a year ago. I sat then in the Beit Midrash, just days before Yom HaTzmaut, for a ceremony celebrating Rav Aaron's receipt of the Pras Yisrael. There was a tangible feeling of joy and excitement in the air as we danced with Rav Aaron around the Beit Midrash in recognition of this well-deserved acknowledgement of his contribution to Israeli society. Now, just a year later, I sat in that same Beit Midrash. But this time, tears were streaming down the faces of those in attendance, and the sounds of sobbing filled the room, reflecting the deep and profound loss we are all feeling. It was a loss felt on at least three levels: the loss for an individual family, the loss for our yeshiva, the loss for Klal Yisrael. The loss for a family, of a husband, a father, a grandfather, for an extended family. The deeply moving hespedim delivered by each of the six children of Rav Aaron expressed most clearly the loss experienced by the Lichtenstein family. It was perhaps best summarized by Rav Gigi, who recalled that when Rav Aaron was asked a few years ago about his greatest accomplishment, he did not respond, as many might have expected, the yeshiva and all that it represents. Rather, he answered that his greatest accomplishment was his family. What a forceful lesson for all of us. Often so involved in our busy professional lives and with communal responsibilities that our family lives must take precedence. The loss for our yeshiva. Rav Aaron was a partner with Rav Amital Zatzal for nearly 40 years in building our yeshiva into one of today's preeminent Torah institutions. For many of us assembled here tonight, we had the zechut to learn at Yeshiva Tar Etzion under Rav Aaron's leadership. It provided a platform for our intellectual, spiritual, and personal growth. No doubt that it was his lamdut that shined through, his brilliant analytic capabilities displayed in his regular shiurim, as well as his 3+ hour shirei klali, in which the brisker derech was keenly highlighted and taught. Indeed, he was not only a master par excellence of the brisker derech, he was a master teacher of it and its methodology. But his personal example of engaging in serious Talmud Torah is only one example of his intensity of purpose. Anyone who saw Rav Aaron daven, or heard him call out the kolot for blowing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, or watched him nearly sprint across from one shir to another carrying a heavy load of sfarim, cannot be but moved by his intense focus. Perhaps most often noted was his deep humility. I recall being deeply impressed as a Talmud in the yeshiva as I observed the seriousness with which he took the mitzvah of kiburav. As illustrated on the Yomim Noraim, when Rav Aaron would speak each word of the davening into his father's ear, since at that point his father was blind and very hard of hearing, or as he caringly helped his father step by step enter and exit the Beit Midrash. With humility, I further recall a Talmud once asking Rav Aaron what Harav thought of a particular matter. The student was simply speaking to Rav Aaron in the third person. Rav Aaron assumed that the Talmud was speaking of the Rav, Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal. Without any false modesty, Rav Aaron simply did not perceive himself in this way, and even if we all certainly saw his greatness. Perhaps most importantly, in speaking of the loss for our yeshiva, it is important to note the critical, nearly unparalleled decision that Rav Amital and Rav Aaron made to ensure the legacy of the yeshiva remains strong for years into the future. I refer, of course, to their foresight in appointing several years ago the next generation of Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Gigi, Rav Meidan, and Rav Moshe Lichtenstein. So often we see leaders unwilling or unable to act to protect the future out of fear of giving up their own power and authority. Not so in the case of Rav Aaron, whose actions ensure that while his death is a severe loss, the yeshiva remains in safe and steady hands to carry on its mission to teach each of its Talmidim to be B'nai Torah, to engage in serious Talmud Torah, to work for the betterment of Klal Yisrael, to be actively involved in broader society with an appreciation of the fact that Torah has something meaningful to say about the modern world and its challenges, to recognize the centrality of Eretz Yisrael, to be a Gomel Chesed. In each of these instances, to do so with the proper degree of humility Menschlichkeit in Yirat Hashem. And third, Rav Aaron's death is a gloss for Klal Yisrael. He was the preeminent leader within our broader community, both in the U.S. and elsewhere in the diaspora, as well as in Israel. In Israel, over 10,000 people came to the Levaya on Tuesday. Tonight we have this gathering here, and another one shortly in Toronto. Rav Aaron's impact on our community was deep and profound. Rav Aaron's voice, both in the written and spoken word, was filled with passion and conveyed with clarity the complexities of important matters of the day, the role of religious Zionism, the value of Hesder, the interplay of ethics and halakha, the complete disavowal and repudiation of violent Jewish extremism, the value, in the words of Matthew Arnold, of the best that has been thought and said in the world, that is, of secular culture, to help us grapple with the universal and eternal questions of human existence, sensitively addressing difficult issue of dealing with non-Orthodox Jews, the consideration of how to strike the appropriate balance between competing interests in developing the personality of a Ben Torah, and the list goes on and on. Let me close with two final thoughts. I recall Simchat Torah some 25 years ago in the yeshiva. Rav Amital was leading us in singing multiple rounds of Ivdot Hashem B'Simcha. At some point, Rav Aaron quieted everyone down and began singing again, but with one critical change. Rather than B'Simcha, he sang Ivdot Hashem B'Yira. This was not a critique of Rav Amital, Chas V'Shalom. Rather, it was a singular lesson for all of us there, that at all times we must strive to be Ovdei Hashem, and yet there are different ways in working towards this goal. We must be cognizant of the different approaches and work toward finding the right balance. As Rav Bick, a Talmid of Rav Aaron's for 50 years, stated in his Hesped on Tuesday, first and foremost, Rav Aaron was an Eved Hashem, and it is this that he set an example for us that remains an eternal legacy for all of us. Finally, yesterday, when I visited the Lichtenstein family, as they sat Shiva in Alon Shvot, Rav Moshe specifically requested that I express the entire family's Hakarat HaTov, their deeply felt gratitude to everyone here this evening. Although we are at a physical distance from the Lichtenstein family, our support for them is keenly felt by them and is a great comfort and nechama to them. As Dr. Tova Lichtenstein said to me, our presence here is reflective of the deep outpouring of our love for Rav Aaron and is very much appreciated by the family.
Thank you, Andrew. As you can hear from his voice, he's had an exhausting few days. Rabbi Beezy Scheinfeld also just came back. I noticed Ellie Berman and Karen Nevetsky, maybe other people close to Talmidim of Rav Lichtenstein, who also just came back from the Levaya to pay Shiva call. I'm going to keep my introduction short so that we have more time to hear from our very insightful speakers tonight. Our first speaker will be Rabbi Yosef Lau, who's going to focus on the relationship each had with Rav Lichtenstein. Rav Lau has known Rav Lichtenstein for many, many years since his student days at Yeshiva University. He spent some time in Rav Aaron's Kollel. They worked together for a number of years in the Rav Shir. His children, his sons have learned with Rav Lichtenstein, and he's a longtime friend, so it's a tremendous pleasure and zechut to have Rabbi Yosef Lau, Mashgiach of Yeshiva University, address us this evening.
Whatever I'm going to say will be incomplete by definition, but somewhat conscious, because I don't want to take advantage of being the first maspid of the evening. After all, when different maspidim speak about an individual, they're talking about the same person. There inevitably is going to be overlap. The Gemara in Sota, Daf Tesvav Amid Aleph, on the Pasuk, Ord, Zarul HaTzadik L'Yishrele Simcha, says L'Tzadikim Ora and L'Yishorim Simcha. And there's a machlokas Rishonim. It couldn't be according to Baran Ari, get away with quoting one shita. Rashi says that the Yesharim, the people who are straight, are on a higher level than tzaddikim. And that's why they're the second part of the pasuk. And simcha is to be seen as more expansive than aura, than light. The Rashbot says the opposite, that simcha is external and light is internal, reflecting Olam Haba. In any event, Rav Aharon Zatzal was a tzaddik and a yasha. Both appellations applied completely. And in the very specific understanding of yasha, of the introduction to Sefer Bereishis of the Netziv and the HaMikdavar, which is referred to as Sefer HaYasha, and says Yeshurim refers to the Avos, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, because of how they behaved with the non-Jewish world around them. To use our terminology, their humaneness, their humanity, which was such a critical part of who Rav Aharon was. The stories of Rav Aharon's anivus are in every newspaper and in the social media. I think there's perhaps not a single Talmud who didn't see at some point an expression of Rav Aharon's apparent lack of awareness of his own greatness, how he saw himself as, in the famous stories of his answering the payphones in Gush, Aaron. Like anybody else, they have more stories than I, and you'll hear some, I assume, from his Talmidim, and as I said, they're all over the social media. I learned a great lesson in one of the first times that I actually got to meet Rav Aharon. When I came to Yeshiva in 1955, Rav Aharon was still in Harvard getting his doctorate, but he was a legend. We all knew about him from one place or another. I knew him somewhat because his sister, Hadassah, kind of was one of the leaders of Bnei Akiva, and she would refer to her brother, who didn't have to go to Bnei Akiva because he didn't learn all the time. So why should we waste his time? There was a night a year later, and we were learning Masechta of Baba Basra, where there are many famous interpretations of the Ketzos HaChosha, a well-known, very lumdish achra. And in particular, in one sugya, which was very complicated, associated with the word chardal, mustard seed, but it's just the word for the sugya, is a very long and dense Ketzos, in which he goes over a number of approaches to the sugya in different Rishonim with great analysis. And I decided I'm going to finish that Ketzos that night. I'm going to stay up as long as it took until I finished it. Finally, a little after 1:30 in the morning, either I did finish it or I was too tired to continue, and I closed the Ketzos HaChosha, walked out of the Beis Medrash, and there was Rav Aharon sitting in the corner, learning as he was doing every other night. There's an incredible lesson here, because everybody knew how brilliant he was. The lesson is not just how much of a masmid Rav Aharon was then and remained his entire life, but it's a lesson for all the bright young kids, all the people who are brilliant, They should never think that brilliance by itself will maintain, be maintained. It's only that which is followed up and deepened by intense hasmada, by continuing to learn all the time, never relying on the brilliance or even his extraordinary memory. All of us in the Rav Shir have them, over those years, have the memory of the Rav giving out Marim HaKomos for the next week Shir, and listening in them, because to the Rav there were a number of other Gemaras that were always relevant to when we were studying, and he would say the Gemara, the Daf, and the Amid, and then from the back of the room, Rav Aaron would correct him, and it was always one Daf earlier or one Daf later, and the Rav assumed, of course, that Rav Aaron was right. I want to make reference to one of the many articles that has appeared because it really struck me. It came out this morning. It's in the Jewish Week online, but too late for the paper, and was picked up by Mosaic. It was written by a former student in Har Etzion, by the name of Chaim Seiman, who is now a professor of law at Villanova Law School. And the background for this article, because we exchanged emails this morning, was it was Monday morning, he found out about the passing of Rav Aaron. He was thrown. And at 9:30 he had to go in to give a class on contracts. And he wasn't really prepared. And he said, "This is a Catholic law school. There's not a single Jew in my class, and yet I feel compelled to say something about my Rebbe that would be relevant to them." So in this article he talks about moderation, not the moderation of people who are lukewarm or don't have very strong feelings and therefore willing to compromise, with the moderation of Rav Aaron. Rav Aaron's always called the moderate. Rav Aaron had extremely strong, passionate feelings. But at the same time, he always recognized that there was another perspective. His moderation was not because he was wishy-washy, was because he could never say this one perspective is the only way to look at it. And since he had to balance, using his favorite word, dialectic, one principle with the other, he ended up being a moderate. And as he pointed out to me, he could explain that without any reference to anything Jewish whatsoever. Rav Aaron introduced to the world, religious Zionist world in Israel, Limud HaTorah and the methodology of risk. Even in the more yeshivish circles, up until today, risk has many more Americans studying than have Israelis. It's not the way Israelis have been trained to learn. But Rav Aaron was very different from the Rav, and I don't have time to go into details. With the Rav, all we saw was this incredible creativity, brilliance. He's in trying to involve us in the process of re-examining the sugya, of coming to the essential issues in new ways, with the Rav famously coming back, changing his opinions and rethinking things. Rav Aaron relearned every sugya over again, but he often came to the same conclusions. Rav Aaron's great strength was methodological, It was incredibly thorough, organized. He brought to bear every Rishon that anyone knew about, and many that most of the Shir had never heard of. Our youngest son, when he, after learning in Gush for a couple of years, I was in the BAMA program at Revel, and he took the class with Professor Chaim Soloveitchik on Rishonim, and I said, "How is it going?" He said, "Well, all the Rishonim, the Chachmei Ashkenaz, the Rav Yoh and the Ravon, that Chaim's introducing to everybody else in the class, I've been hearing Shurim about for years." To Rav Aaron, it's all part of the learning process. At the same time, and seamlessly, all integrated together, Rav Aaron incorporated his knowledge of literature, sometimes quoting things in Shir that the Israelis had never heard about, didn't know what names meant that he was using. But Rav Aaron wasn't showing off. To Rav Aaron, it was all relevant, and therefore had to be brought in. But it wasn't, he liked reading books. All kinds of literature is fine. He had an approach to literature. He had his Rebbe in literature, Douglas Bush. I remember being at the wedding and seeing Rav Aaron dancing with Douglas Bush at his wedding, with a certain approach to literature. Literature was meant to clarify, to deepen our understanding of the human condition. And literature, to Rav Aaron, was what gave us a proper sense of human beings. Rav Aaron was a true religious humanist. Rav Aaron is famous for, and I see, Baruch Hashem, a number of women in this room, for his extraordinary contribution to Talmud Torah for women. And frankly, the combination of Rav Aaron's commitment to Talmud Torah as the essential expression of Jewish life and close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and his humanism made his commitment to women learning Torah almost automatic. Women are human. Jewish women have a right to get close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One of his articles where Baron says the obligation, responsibility to learn Torah, even for women, which is not always clear and controversial in circles, stems from the mitzvah of Avas Hashem. The mitzvah of loving HaKadosh Baruch Hu requires us to try to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we do that through Talmud Torah. No one ever said the mitzvah of Avas Hashem is a mitzvah that says Shazman Grama, that only applies to men. It doesn't apply to women. I want to conclude by talking about the incredible decision that Rav Aaron and Tibbot L'Chaim, his wife Tova, made in leaving America and going to Israel. Everybody in Yeshiva knew that it was just a matter of time, it may have been a long matter of time, but Rav Aaron was the future. Yeshiva was filled with incredible Talmidei Chachamim, but Europeans from a world that no longer could reproduce itself. Who was going to be the American successor? Rav Aaron already, in a few years that he was saying Shir, had a gigantic Shir. Some of the outstanding Talmidei Chachamim of that era till today describe themselves as Talmidim of Rav Aaron. And he left. He left all of this. An American Jewry and Yeshiva University and certainly modern or centrist orthodoxy is far the poorer for it. And he went to Israel. And not only did he go to Israel, when he came to Yeshiva Taretz Yom, it was a few shacks. There were less boys in the yeshiva than there were in his shiur in YU. And he wasn't going to even be the single Rosh Yeshiva. He was going to be a co-Rosh Yeshiva. Incredible. So one would have imagined, Rabbi Aaron was, the motto of the religious Zionist after the Six-Day War, the mood of the time, Reshit Tzmichat Gulatenu, the messianism that raged. Rabbi Aaron wasn't that in the slightest. Rabbi Aaron in 1968 already spoke about the concerns that the great victory of the Six-Day War would lead to militarism, and it's going to lead us to messianic dreams without the proper foundation, and it could be dangerous. No, Rabbi Aaron loved Eretz Yisrael, and he felt it was the future of the Jewish people, and he had to go. And it was not easy then, and it didn't remain easy. After all, Rabbi Aaron's way of learning Torah, Rabbi Aaron's knowledge of English literature, his religious humanism, is coming from the Beis Medrash of the Rav, from learning with Rav Huttner and Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik, was foreign to Israeli religious Zionist community. And it's foreign to much of that community even today, who reluctantly acknowledge what a Gaon he was, but they didn't understand him. His mentality was completely different. But that didn't matter. This was the right thing to do. This was the Torah he was going to teach. So Rabbi Aaron, we lost Rabbi Aaron, though. He came each year, gave shurim at a drop of a hat, was the Rosh HaMedabrim, B'chol Dovah, of Rabbi Yehuda, as they say, the Tanoim, at the Orthodox Forum. If Rabbi Aaron was there, everybody turned to Rabbi Aaron, no matter what the topic was. But he fundamentally taught his Talmidim, not just the Americans, but Israelis to much greater numbers in the Gush. Now, we think in terms of the Americans. I'm now at the point when I have an Israeli grandson in the Gush, so I don't think that way so quickly anymore. Though I feel so sad that my grandson won't be Zohar to learn with Rabbi Aaron. Doesn't mean he's transferring to any other yeshiva. He still loves the Gush, but he's not going to have Rabbi Aaron. And Rabbi Aaron's influence in Israel came more slowly, with controversies with people who didn't understand him at all, and yet it is profound. The day after he passed away, the Jerusalem Post's editorial was all about Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein. Jerusalem Post, granted, it's written in English, but it's an Israeli publication. It's not a religious paper. And it spoke about Rabbi Aaron's legacy. Yehi zichro baruch.
The next must be Rabbi Nati Helfgott, was a very close Talmid of Rav Aaron for more than 30 years. I know personally that the first thing he would do when he would get to Israel, go directly to see Rav Aaron, Rav Lichtenstein, And he had the schut a little more than 2 weeks ago when he got off the plane in Israel. He went and he spent over an hour with Rav Lichtenstein. So it's a real honor in our schut to hear from Rabbi Hofka this evening.
I want to thank Maury again, Rabbi Kelman, for organizing this askara. As we leave Yom HaTzmaut, I'm thinking of the Dvar Torah that Rav Lichtenstein was fond of repeating many, many times. He contrasted Minhag Ashkenaz and Minhag Sfarad. Minhag Sfarad, they only make a bracha on the first and the third coats, and not on the middle ones, because it's considered you already made a bracha. But Minhag Ashkenaz, if you make a bracha on each one, based on the Otzeiti, V'itzalti, V'ga'alti, that even partial redemption is also redemption, and that we celebrate it. And even if we can't fully appreciate every element, and even if every element hasn't happened yet, we still make a bracha. This evening, obviously in the short amount of time, none of us can capture the entirety, the totality, the arba kosot of who Rav Aaron was, but if we can say something partial, that's also will be our zchut. And it's special to speak here. Rav Lichtenstein spoke in this pulpit many times in the 90s. We often would bring him, when I lived here, we often would bring him to the West Side. And right here, Rav Aaron was the sandik of my son, Ephraim, who's here this evening, 13 years ago, right here on this podium. So it's very special to be here. The Gemara says about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, two interesting statements. One in the Gemara in Bava Basra, and it's in Avos de Rabbi Nassan, Perek Yudalid. The Gemara says, Amru Allah Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Shlo Hiniach Mikra, Mishnah, Gemara, Halachot, Agadot, Tosefto, Dikdukei Torah, Dikdukei Sofrim. They said of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai that there was nothing in the entire corpus of Torah literature that he did not only know, but lo himiach, it wasn't with him. He knew everything. And on the other hand, the Gemara Brachot says, Amru Allah Riyokhtam and Zakkai, Shalo Gdimu Adam Shalom Me'olam, Afilu Nachri Shivashuk, that he was, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the nicest person, the most decent person, the most human person that you could ever meet. And of course, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the great leader of the Jewish people at a critical moment in Jewish history. Those are three aspects that I just want to mention, touch on this evening. Rav Aaron's Gadlut B'Torah, Rav Aaron as the person who had the human decency, the care, the honesty, the probity, the integrity, the humility that all of people have been speaking about, and his leadership, his third quality. In Torah study, of course, so much as Rabbi Blau mentioned on the people are writing about, Rav Aaron had the entire corpus of the rabbinic literature. Not only he knew it, but he had it worked out. He had it lehiniach. It was really meniach bekufso, as the Gemara says. It was in his pocket. He had it analyzed, categorized. And of course, when I think of Rav Aaron, I think of the statement of the Rambam at the beginning of the Perush HaMishnayos. The Rambam talks about his father's Rebbe, the Ri Magash. And the Rambam says, Ki lev ha'ish ha'hu b'talmud mav'it. If somebody looks at this person, you're amazed and overwhelmed by the quality of his learning. L'mishi yistakel b'dvarav v'omek sichlo b'iyun. Al asher kim'at yomar bo v'kamo lo haya lefanav melech b'minhago v'darko. The Talmudic learning of this man amazes everyone who understands his words and the depth of his speculative spirit, so that it might almost be said of him that his equal has never existed. That's what the Rambam said about the Ri Magash, and in our generation we could say about Rav Aaron. In addition, of course, to his learning, his tremendous knowledge, understanding, as Rabbi Blau mentioned, his hasmada. Just tell, one story. I'm sure Rabbi Blau remembers it as well. It was in the mid-80s. Rav Aaron was in NYU visiting the Rav and giving Bechinot, and there was a bomb scare in the Morgenstern dorm, in the middle of the night. So it was 2 a.m, and all of us, we were in our shorts, we were in pajamas, we ran out. It was cold, and Rav Aaron runs out, he's still in his suit and tie. He'd been learning, he was sitting learning, writing an article, something.
And we're waiting around, and some of the boys went over and said, Rebbe, would you give a shiur? He said, okay, give me 20 minutes. I've got to prepare. Of course, he didn't need to prepare. He wanted to prepare. So he prepared. Gave a shiur for an hour and a half, 3 a.m. Because he couldn't give a shiur that was less than an hour and a half in those days. That was the type of hasmada, and of course, many of us remember that, you know, after Tisha B'Av or after Yom Kippur, just like in Valazhin, he wouldn't go and run to eat like all of us. He would sit and learn because that's what he missed the most. And that's what the world, at that point, someone should be learning, even after Yom Kippur. Rav Aaron, of course, was the model of human decency and morality that we all looked up to. Rav Chaim Navon has a quote on one of those social media, one of the things they put out many years ago, or maybe 2 years ago, says, "Kshigati la yeshiva, lo emanti sheyesh anashim ka'elu, adayin ba'olam." Can't imagine that there were still people like that in the world. The level of decency, of honesty, of concern, of always, when he got a tramp, not wanting to sit in the front, always the couple should be together because that's the way life, normal life, is supposed to be. As Rabbi Blau mentioned about the amount of care, of taking care of his family, I remember, again, just a personal story. I was in Gruss in 1987. I went on a date in Tel Aviv. I didn't have a car. I had a car then. Came back on the bus. Rav Aaron got on the bus. And the bus was a little crowded, so I stood up. He gave me a death stare. What are you doing? He said, you have a seat? Sit. I'll stand. You know, Mamish, it was... those kinds of things always remain etched in your life. And of course, the balance about human decency, a number of years ago, when he was still in Betokvo, a number of us who were in Chinuch, we approached him if we could meet, and we met and we discussed issues. And I asked him, I said, you know, I was a young parent at that time, I had little kids, and I always felt very guilty. You know, I guess it's part of what you feel as a parent. You know, you're not a good parent. But one of the things I was guilty about was I didn't go to Minyan enough. Because in yeshiva, what are you taught? You have to go to Minyan, Tefillah B'Tzibur. And I wasn't going to Minyan because my wife needed help. Because the kids were, you know. And he said, Natty, I want to tell you, from 1963 to 1966, I missed Minyan a lot. We had 3 kids under the age of 5. And you know what it took to get a kid ready to get, you know, you put on this and you put on that to go. I said, that's, of course, you're with your wife. And then he went into the whole thing. Is minyan a tefillah b'tzibur, you know, a chiyuv? Is it not a chiyuv, of course, which I had heard the shiur before. But it was beautiful to see and to hear. And of course, leadership, as Rabbi Blau mentioned, the third aspect, the leadership of the modern Orthodox community. And you know, I was thinking about what you said, and also when I was younger, I also thought, oh, how terrible it was that he left America, left us, you know. But on the flip side, I think in certain ways he maybe even had more of an impact, because he had such an impact on Israel, and at the same time, in many ways, on America as well. And I don't know, you know, the history will still judge what the ultimate impact is. Leadership of the modern Orthodox community, the religious Zionist community, Torah Mada, interaction with the world, women's learning, questions of Giyur, questions in Russia, moral lacunae in the state of Israel, the Rabin assassination, Sabra, Shatila, all these things that he was such a voice. Rav Aaron, after the Rav was no longer active and was not able to be approached, Rav Aaron got very close to Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Zatzal, in Israel. And he often would repeat something Rav Shlomo Zalman said about Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer. Rav Shlomo Zalman would say about Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer that even if he had not been such a gaon, he would have been the Sheina Yid in Yerushalayim, the most special, beautiful Jew in all of Jerusalem. And of course, the same can be said about, Rav Aaron said it about Rav Shlomo Zalman. And as we look back, we say the same thing about Rav Aaron. And in his final words about Rav Shlomo Zalman in the published essay he wrote, Rav Aaron wrote, "And yet what is left with us and what we shall so sorely miss is the memory of a remarkable gadol, at once overawing and benign, who bestrode us like a colossus, and yet related to us great and small at the core of our most inner being." And what more can you say as well about Rav Aaron?
Thank you very much, Rabbi Helfgott. Just want to permit me for half a second. Rabbi Helfgott reminded me just a personal story with your story about the bus, and Eli Berman can verify this. After our second year in Yeshiva, four of us were on our way to Europe, on the way back to North America, and who was on the plane but Rav Lichtenstein and his wife. And they were giving out the papers, and it came to, there was one paper left, and Rav Lichtenstein went to get it, and one of the students, one of the people on the plane, went to get it, and Rav Lichtenstein said, "No, it's your paper." He wouldn't take it, and their friend, of course, couldn't read it. He just sat there. He couldn't read the paper because that was his humanity, exactly, just incredible and nevus. Our third speaker, our third masvid, is Rabbi Dr. David Berger. All our speakers, of course, have a tremendous merits, as I said, but I'm just going to focus on the connection to Rav Lichtenstein. Rabbi Dr. Berger goes back also, like Rabbi Blau, many, many years. Perhaps I mentioned Rabbi Blau, can I call him a Talmid Chaver? And his response was, it's difficult for anybody to really be on the level of a Chaver with Rav Lichtenstein, obviously not in terms of his closeness, but to feel somewhat of equality. Rabbi Berger goes back many years as perhaps a Talmid Chaver. Not only did his two sons study in Gush Etzion for a number of years, since his daughter couldn't, she married Eli Berman, who studied there as well for 3 years, and his grandson, Eli and Miriam's son, studied there also for 2 years. So Rabbi Berger goes back a long time, discussed many issues with Rav Lichtenstein, so again, it's a tremendous source to have another Dr. Berger address us.
All the speakers have mentioned Rav Lichtenstein's Anova, and I hope that what I'm going to say now is not going to be misunderstood as an effort to express Anova, but to be called a Talmid Chover of Rav Lichtenstein is something I have to deny just in the interest of elementary truth and decency. That's a madrega that I really can't aspire to by a very wide margin, but I do appreciate the comment anyway. We would all like to believe that genuine mastery of Torah on the part of a believing Jew automatically brings with it a status of supreme righteousness. This certainly should be the case, and most of the time it probably is. Nonetheless, in a Jewish world of contentiousness, of ideological friction, of access to every position and even every casual comment regarding matters of the day issued by Talmidei Chachamim, this conviction can be sorely tested. At their cynical worst, some Jews, especially modern Orthodox Jews, wonder if the coexistence of mastery of Torah and supreme righteousness is a realistic expectation. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein reinforced our faith in the ethical power of Torah. His control of the corpus of the written and oral Torah approached the absolute, and he personified integrity, concern for others, genuine, almost startling humility, as you've heard, everything that the word tzaddik conveys. The combination of encyclopedic knowledge and humility is illustrated, among many other stories, in one that I was told many years ago about his attitudes towards setting aside some time for the rapid study of Gemara in order to gain familiarity with a broad range of material. He opposed such a so-called Seder in Bikius, which he characterized as studying so as not to understand. All study, he believed, should be Be'iyun, with deep analysis and attention to detail. When some students objected with the argument that they wanted to gain a broad knowledge of the Talmud, He reportedly replied, "So study the entire Talmud B'Iyun. I did it." In his case, this response was not an affectation. The objectively risible assumption that anyone could do what he did was taken for granted, or at least it was not rejected out of hand. I formulated the meaning of tzidkus in terms that have concrete meaning: integrity, concern for others, humility. However, in addressing the persona of Rav Lichtenstein, I need to add a term that I hardly ever use because of its elusiveness and frequent application to approaches that disturb me: spirituality. For all his embodiment of the learning associated with the ultra-intellectualized world of Brisk, anyone with even passing familiarity with Rav Lichtenstein encountered a figure suffused with the almost tangible presence of the creator of the universe. In a famous brief essay on faith that has just been reprinted, Rav Lichtenstein wrote that for him, quote, "the greatest source of faith has been the Ribono Shel Olam himself," unquote. And he went on to describe the intimate relationship that he so frequently experienced. It is a commonplace among his students, and this was mentioned, and among his acquaintances, that to have seen Rav Lichtenstein daven on Yom Kippur was to understand what prayer is. I saw this davening at YU before he moved to Israel, and his status as an ish tefillah was underscored by his daughter at the funeral. One of the most moving moments for me as I watched the video was her report of his reaction a year and a half ago when he was brought by ambulance to the hospital as death appeared to loom. "B'yadcha av kidruchi," he declared, "podiso si Hashem kel emes," thus simultaneously commending his soul to God and pleading for divine mercy. For the modern Orthodox community, Rav Lichtenstein, like the Rav, served as a model for Torah umada, Torah and secular study or general culture. Unlike the Rav, Rav Lichtenstein also addressed the issue frontally, most notably in a lengthy essay in a volume in which I had the privilege to participate. But like the Rav, he did not directly engage specific intellectual challenges or difficulties that pursuit of secular disciplines can raise. His central approach, rather, underscored the ways in which such a pursuit can enrich the understanding and experience of Torah and faith. What spoke to him most was, of course, literature. Now, even though he was acutely conscious of the fact that many Torah scholars would look askance at his invocation of non-Jewish figures in presentations of aspects of the Jewish worldview, he did not shrink from doing so regularly and unapologetically. I cannot vouch for the historicity of the following story, which comes in more than one form, but it is said that Rav Lichtenstein, in a Torah discourse where Rav Ovadia Yosef was present, made reference to Dostoevsky. When he sat down, Rav Ovadia purportedly turned to him and said, "V'ani chashavti she'ani makir et kol gidolei acharonei ha'ashkenazim." I thought I knew all the great authorities of the Ashkenazi. At a Gush dinner where Rabbi Helfgott was the alumni honoree when he was a teacher and not yet a communal rabbi, Rav Lichtenstein said something that I imagine you remember, I remember it, that would not have been said by a great rabbi at any comparable event in Jewish history outside possibly of Renaissance Italy. He said, "As Aquinas said, teaching is the ideal synthesis of the active and contemplative life." Rav Lichtenstein's openness to the value of outside culture and his innate sense of tolerance did not mean, and this we have also heard, that he was soft or even flexible when it came to issues that he saw as central to Judaism. He would not allow the expression of certain theological views in a volume of the Orthodox Forum. He firmly opposed the dominant forms of biblical criticism. And he was even critical of typical approaches to the academic study of Talmud, in which a significant number of religious Jews engage. He once cited approvingly, in a talk at YU, the sardonic reaction of a listener who had heard a lecture delivered by a religious scholar utilizing such approaches. The Talmud says that for everything that God forbade, he permitted something similar. Kol mai de'osar lo nachmona, shorolon kivose. That listener reacted to the talk by saying, "Kol mai de'osar lo nachmona, Sharolon kivaseh. Osarlon bikores hamikro. Sharolon bikores hatamu. For everything that God forbade, he permitted something similar. He forbade Bible criticism. He permitted Talmud criticism. Jacob Katz, Seder of Aaron, was the one who said this. Even in dealing with rigorously orthodox circles, Rav Lichtenstein did not allow his openness to varied approaches to blunt his expression of sharp criticism when he felt that principle required it. On the one hand, as we have just heard, he expressed unalloyed reverence for Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. On the other, Rav Lichtenstein's discourse on Das Torah, in the sense of unalloyed rabbinic authority, led him to affirm in vigorous terms that a public talk by Rav Shach at a politically critical moment was deeply misguided because of his lack of familiarity with Israeli realities in the secular community. Rav Lichtenstein was open, he was tolerant, but he could also be firm and uncompromising. Assessing Rav Lichtenstein's impact requires some comparison with the giant who was his father-in-law and with the man who invited him to Yeshivat HaRetzion and served as his Korosh Yeshiva. The Rav was a figure for the ages as both a Talmid Chacham and a philosopher. The main sentiment that he inspired was awe. A select few individuals were genuinely close to him and were no doubt able to develop more intimate sentiments as well. Nonetheless, even for them, I think that what predominated was awe. Rav Amital was an impressive Talmid Chacham, but in his case, the dominant response inspired was love. Chazal tell us that as Hashem Elokecha Tirah, you must fear the Lord your God, includes Talmidei Chachamim, or better, is channeled through Talmidei Chachamim. But I think that we would be justified in saying something similar about Ve'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha. You can learn to love God from the experience of loving Talmidei Chachamim. Rav Lichtenstein, who was a towering Talmid Chacham, and a figure who, for all his reserve, afforded some degree of access to his person and personality, inspired both awe and love, though perhaps at a slightly lesser level in each case than his teacher and his colleague respectively. As to influence, the Rav's emerges out of the works of a world-class thinker and affects large numbers of Jews through his elite students and popularizations of his teachings and writings. Rav Lichtenstein's massive output and personal example made him a guide and mentor in a way that was more direct, and I think even exceeds the everyday impact of the Rav, at least during the Rav's lifetime. To some degree, I'm reminded of what my father, who was among other things a folklorist, wrote in an article on folk tales about Rashi, published 22 years after a similar article about the Rambam. Legends about the Rambam, he said, reflect the Yirat Kavod, the awed reverence that people felt, that the Jewish people felt, toward a figure who inhabits the highest, largely inaccessible circles. Legends about Rashi reflect a degree of familiarity, a sense of greater comfort with a beloved father figure and teacher of stellar character. Back in 1969, when Rav Lichtenstein was still at Yeshiva University, he unknowingly caused one of the sharpest and most amusing criticisms to which I was ever subjected by a student. I had just begun my teaching career, and I had to read a New Testament verse to my class. At the time, my only New Testament was part of an old, crumbling King James Bible lent to me by my father. When I took it out to read the verse, a student declared, quite audibly, "His New Testament looks like Rav Lichtenstein's Rambam." About 25 years later at a Gush dinner, I told this story to Rav Lichtenstein, who reacted with considerable amusement. I asked myself if I would have told a comparable story to the Rav, and my answer is an unequivocal no. The day after Rav Lichtenstein's Patira, I was speaking with the Rabbi Blau, who remarked that people use the word irreplaceable loosely, But in this case, it is true. I replied that I had not asked of Liechtenstein many questions, but on several occasions, when there was more at stake than technical halacha, and the great authority with real Das Torah was needed, I called him in Israel. On those occasions and many others, I wondered whom else I could have asked, and the agonizing answer was, no one. A similar comment was made to me by Professor Schneur Lyman after Rav Liechtenstein was consulted at our urging regarding a very sensitive decision that confronted the editors of the forthcoming RCA Siddur. Our community is blessed with great Talmidei Chachamim. This is not to diminish their stature and the great honor that they are due. I have asked them questions and will, with the help of God, continue to do so. But sometimes clichés are indeed true. Losing the constellation of remarkable learning, broad horizons, profound judgment, exemplary humanity, and closeness to God embodied by Rav Aaron Liechtenstein leaves us an orphaned generation. May his merit protect us.
Thank you very much. Our last must read of the evening is also a very close Talmid, Rabbi Ben Zion Scheinfeld, who had this chus to learn with Rav Liechtenstein for 3 years, who learned with two of his sons, Bechavusa, with Rabbi Moshe and Rabbi Yitzi. Liechtenstein had this chus to not only know the Liechtensteins very well, but also his parents. He learned with Rav Aaron's father for a couple of years weekly when he was blind already. He used to eat with the Rav Liechtensteins every week. Also just came back from the Vias. So again, it's really a big schuss for us to hear from such a close Talmud of Rav Liechtenstein, Rav Zion Scheinfeld.
Thank you, Rabbi Kalman, for arranging this. Difficult to be mastered by Liechtenstein in the best of circumstances, to be following three such beautiful, powerful, thoughtful speakers. It's hard to know what to add. Forgive me if I repeat some of the themes. This Monday morning at about 6 a.m., I woke up. My brother texted me, I woke up with a text, that Liechtenstein was niftar. He explained to me that there's one way I could get to the Levaya, one way I could get to the funeral. There's a flight leaving Newark Airport at 1:30, and that perhaps I could get a seat on that flight. A few thousand dollars and 10 hours of being squished in a middle seat. I'm a big guy. Being squished in the middle seat was pretty difficult. I went to Levaya. Despite my deep relationships with the Liechtensteins and Liechtenstein family, it would have been simpler to stay here and to perhaps see the Levaya on screen, online. But something compelled me to say that my life wouldn't be complete. Not my outer life, my inner life, the inner world that motivated my heart. It would not be complete unless I could go and take the opportunity to acknowledge the impact that Rav Liechtenstein had on my very soul. In a life that was, hopefully our lives are built on a quest for truth, for spirituality, for Avas Hashem, my encounter with Rav Liechtenstein forever altered that journey. It was altered then, and it never was the same. And I had to go there and tell Rav Aaron, or at least be there to tell him, to try to tell him that the impact that he had. I got off the plane, and Rav Rosenzweig and two other very hush people from the Gush community were in a car together. We drove through the hills of Gush Etzion. And as we got closer and closer, this urgency to be there, to see Rav Aaron's not Aaron, there's no Aaron in Israel, to see Aaron's tallis-clad body brought into the Beis Medrash, and to be able to feel and say, this person had altered forever my inner journey. The urgency to do that grew and grew. And there was a gasp in the room when Rav Aaron's body, tallis-clad body, entered the room. To be honest with you, this wasn't the way it was supposed to be. I grew up in high school. I was a pretty modern Orthodox family, but my father came from Williamsburg, and he went to Tel Aviv, here at Smicha from YU, and I was a pretty serious high school student, and I was into learning, and I wanted to become a serious Oved Hashem. And I felt this modern Orthodox world was okay, but that was the watered-down version of what was supposed to be happening in the world. I was going to get 1 year of Rav Lichtenstein and then get out and find the real depth of Torah in this black hat world that I always admired and still to this day feel very close to and drawn to. But I never expected, no one ever warned me that by meeting Rav Lichtenstein, my journey would never be the same. That I would never meet in any world, in modern Orthodox world or in Yeshivish world, I would never meet a person who would ever impact my life and my Avodas Hashem like Rav Lichtenstein. I had to go to the Slavaya, and I had to tell Rav Aaron that the force of his personality and his truth forever changed my life. I want to convey in just a few minutes how I defined that force and how it impacted. The Mesilas Yesharim begins with the following statement: Yisod HaChasidus v'Shoresh HaAvoda HaTamima Hu SheYisbarer V'Yisames Eitel HaAdam Machovaso Ba'Olamo Ulamatzorach Shiyasim Mabato Umegamaso B'Chol Asher Hu Amel Kol Yimei Chayav. The foundation of saintliness and the root of perfection in the service of God lies in a man's coming to see clearly and to recognize as a truth the nature of his duty in this world and the end towards which he should direct his vision and aspiration in all of his labors, all the days of his life. If I had to say one midah about Rav Lichtenstein, it was this ever-present recognition of chovaso ba'olamo, an unbelievable sense of mission in every single minute and second of his existence. One of the maspidim, one of the kids, one of his wonderful children, said that they never in their entire life saw the father waste 1 minute. And Rav Lichtenstein was always infused, as so many of the maspidim mentioned, with this hasmada of that religious goal. That religious goal that, again, perhaps one imagines in some deep world in Eastern Europe, of listening every second, that line of Mesilas Yesharim, Machovaso Ba'olamo. We say in Pirkei Avos, Im Lamadta Torah Harbe Al Tachzik Tova La'atzmcha Ki Lekach Notzarta. Those words, Ki Lekach Notzarta, because that's why you were created. It infused every encounter with Rav Lichtenstein. His love of Torah was the focus of his entire life. It's funny, we call Rav Lichtenstein a modern Orthodox rabbi. And it's hard to... The term modern Orthodox has so many meanings. I don't want to get into political trouble here. But sometimes it connotes a moderation. Compromise, as one of the Rabbanim mentioned. Rav Lichtenstein was extreme. He was extreme in his focus. And I've met other Gedolei Yisrael and been close to them. I've never met a person who has been so focused on their mission of Mataraso Ba'olamo. And this, of course, was combined with the purity of heart. And somehow, in the religious field in particular, it's hard to know why, there's such personality need for personal acknowledgement, and there's such complicated motivations. Tolstoy has a very beautiful short story called Father Sergius, about a priest who's spent his whole life in holiness, and then he sins at the end of his life, and then he's looking for somebody with a pure heart who he could go to, and he finds his cousin, they're all older now, and he finds her in the house, and the cousin says she's not a religious woman, but she says, stay here, I have to go out and do something, help this old lady down the block, I'll be back. And the cousin closes the door. And Tolstoy ends the story of Father Sergius with the following line. The priest reflected that he had lived his whole life for man, thinking he was living it for God, while his cousin had lived her whole life for God, thinking she was living it for man. Rabbi Lichtenstein was a person who thought he was living his whole life for God and who lived his whole life for God. There was such purity of purpose. The humility, the purity of purpose was so unique. The stories have been mentioned. There's always apparently a lot of bus stories. So my bus story is that Lichtenstein was on a bus and he had a seat. This is not where he's standing and you want to give him a seat. He actually had a seat. And in the middle of the bus ride, he gets up and he says to the person, you paid the same amount for your ticket that I paid. I sat half the journey, now it's your turn. My bus rides are never the same anymore because of that. I can't enjoy my seat anymore. And now in America, if you did that to somebody, they would think you're crazy, so they would even like to just call the police. It would be strange, but such purity of heart, such purity of spirit. Of course, the famous story no one mentioned is that Rav Lichtenstein came before Pesach to do his Miluim, and he came to the army base, and he was a Rav Tzva'i, he was just supposed to be there to be Mashkiach, but he came clean-shaven, and the Rav who was in charge of the army base had no idea who this clean-shaven man was, and instead of being a Mashkiach and sitting around, he told him to go and clean the kitchen. And Rav Lichtenstein spent the next 2 days cleaning the kitchen, and then the Rav found out that he just told the Gadol Hador to go clean the kitchen. Dr. Berger mentioned that the words that Rav Lichtenstein said in the ambulance were so powerful. Of all the aspects, of all the lines, that was the line I also was going to mention, where Rav Lichtenstein in the ambulance said, "Biyadcha af kidruchi padiso si Hashem kelen," as such focus. And that was his life, such singular focus. And I must say that by being at the Levaya, one of the overwhelming feelings after all the aspects was the following feeling. I have never been at a Levaya with Rav Lichtenstein's Aron sitting there, wrapped in a talus. I've never been at a Levaya where I could say that somebody was going back to the Kisei HaKavod, completely fulfilling every tachlis of every ability that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them. And what we felt in that room, in that Levaya, what everybody felt, was that we were giving back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu the purest karban, the purest offering that could ever be given by a person whose whole life had no gava and no kas and no ulterior motives and only focus from the day of birth with this idea of a mission, a sense of mission and achrayus to Hashem Yisbarach. Of course, the Lichtenstein wasn't only about devotion. It was an amazing breadth of knowledge, and speakers spoke so beautifully about Rav Lichtenstein's breadth of knowledge and English literature and how it was about his humanism and the whole picture of humanity that infused his whole life. And I would have spoke more about it, but it was so beautifully said already. I just wanted to mention a powerful moment in my life that, again, altered my journey forever. I came to Gush. I was young. Left after 11th grade, I was 16 years old. I was so focused on Limud HaTorah, I just wanted to get Rav Lichtenstein's Derech HaLimud and get out. But we were learning Bava Basra, and we usually used to put Mar Makomos by the little radio to announce. So I got there, and everyone says that a 12:45, Rav Lichtenstein's going to give a sicha. So we were learning a sugi in Bava Basra. I thought maybe he'd had an insight into the Tosfos or the Yad Ramah or something, a Rashbam. So very excitedly, I'm sitting there, and preparing, and Rav Lichtenstein gets up and he speaks about the Cambodian boat people. I never heard of the Cambodian boat people, actually. it was in Hebrew, I wasn't sure I heard the Cambodian boat people. But someone, it was about the Cambodian boat people, and he said, we have to collect money for the Cambodian boat people. I cannot tell you the shock to my soul of thinking my tachlis this year is to figure out the Yad Ramah and Bava Basra, but to find out that I'm supposed to be worrying about the Cambodian boat people. And I sat with my chavrusa at lunch afterwards, and we just felt that we had just been catapulted into a new world of what Torah concerns, of the vast array of spirituality that HaKadosh Baruch Hu demands of a Jew. And I don't know if I actually ever reconciled the intense hasmada that Rabbi Lichtenstein had with all of the social justice and how one's supposed to divide their time, but all I know is that that moment forever changed my goal of spirituality and what the world would bring. Another very famous sikhah that mentioned it also brought out this unique view of Rav Lichtenstein. It was actually very relevant. We spoke about, are you allowed to shave Erev Shabbos during the Omer? Very relevant halachic shayla for. So he gave a sikha, and are you allowed to shave? Are you not allowed to shave? And he gave a halachic shir. And then he gave a sikha and shalach shivus, and he spoke about Parshas Emor. And he spoke about, because some people were saying you're being mekil, you're telling people you're allowed to shave Erev Shabbos, how could you be mekil? Some flack from some bacham in the yeshiva. So Rav Lichtenstein then went and gave his sikha, and he said the following. He says, Amor el kohen b'nei Aaron, l'nefesh lo yitama ba'amav, kiim l'shiro akor v'lov. Right? Tell kohanim they cannot be metamei to mason, except if their relative dies. And Rav Lichtenstein asked, let me ask you, do you think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was being mekil in Hilchos Tumah when he said you're allowed to be metame for your father and your mother and your sister and your brother? Is that a kula? He said, that's not a kula. That's a chumrah. That is a chumrah in connection to parents. That is, and Rav Lichtenstein pointed out that I was not mekil or machmir in the shir I gave yesterday about telling you you are or not allowed to shave. I simply was talking about a value. There's a value of Kavod Shabbos. There's a value of Siyus HaOmer, of the Avelis. And it's not a kula and it's not a chumrah. It's just, and that perspective, that broadness of perspective, as was mentioned, just totally changed my world. What I thought was a kula can now be a chumrah. And the values and the complexity, it was beautiful and it was sincere and it was real and it was life and it was life transforming, transformative. And that leads me, I'll end, I know it's late, with the following reflection. When I entered the yeshiva for the hesped, I saw a world, so many of the Talmidim had torn kriya. And it was like I was standing there in a world of these very special, sincere, over the Hashem, who experienced just what I did. They experienced, they were serious people who wanted to get close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they met Rav Lichtenstein, and his view, and his purity, and his analysis had forever transformed their journey. And their lives were there to look at this man and to tear kriya, because their mabato ba'olama, not only their Torah, but their view of everything sacred and how they viewed and felt the world was forever different. And it was a world of, I felt so special to be one of those Talmidim, to be sitting there, to be able to tear my shirt and say, this person, his view of life forever and ever transformed who we are and who I am. The Gemara says you should only learn Torah from someone who is doma l'malachi asharis. Rav Lichtenstein was somebody who is doma l'malachi asharis. He changed the people who he impacted. His complexity and spirituality is unparalleled. And as he goes before the Kisei HaKavod, with all the knowledge of the complexity of the issues of this day, I hope that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that this person is the best shot we will ever have of figuring out this world. And perhaps he'll be a Milutz Yosher and bring more clarity and and maybe urge HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give more clarity to our lives. Before we close, I just wanted to thank again Congregation Ohr Tzedek, Rabbi Schwartz, for hosting this, also Yerucha Rosenberg for putting together the video for the evening, but most importantly, in this very difficult time, and in this abelis for many of us, so for such a gadol losing, being lost with darkness around this, hearing the beautiful words tonight from our four, the incredible Maspidim, really real Talmidim, who really understood the message of Lichtenstein, and hopefully that will inspire and noble us to continue really the incredible journey that he began of being an Oved Hashem, of being a servant of God, and that will continue to inspire us really on a daily basis. As we know, Tzadikim b'mitatam k'rim chayim, Rav Lichtenstein lives, and so many different Talmidim, and may his legacy continue to grow for many, many, many years to come. Yehi Zichro Baruch. We'll now daven Mari, and we'll just take a minute. Thank you again, everybody, for coming and giving kavod.